Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Jason Coleman, and you are listening to Things That Make You Go, Book Review Podcast. And welcome to another episode of Things That Make You Go, Book Review Podcast. I am your host, Jason Coleman, the One Man Book Club, and thank you so much for joining me for another one of my book discussions. I wouldn't necessarily call what I do book reviews. I don't necessarily talk about how good or bad a book is, although I do sometimes, but normally no. What I really want to do is I just read a book and I kind of use the book's concept or what the main proposition of the book is as a jump off point for just some of my own ideas about things I think about and how these ideas might be relatable to your own personal life kind of thing. I do want to apologize. I know I haven't got you guys out a podcast in a few weeks now. I'm sorry, just, you know, life and stuff. So, but anyway, I'm back now, and let's get to some books. Okay, today I'm going to be reviewing the book Talking to Crazy, How to Deal with the Irrational and Impossible People in Your Life by Mark Goulston. And it's funny because when people, sometimes my friends or family will ask me what book I'm planning on reviewing for my next podcast, and I would say, every once in a while I come across a book's title where it has a very visceral reaction on people. Like as soon as they hear the title, they immediately will grunt or groan or sigh or something, and that's what I found happening when I told them about this book that I was reading. I was just, you know, perusing. I actually listened to this on audiobook. I was just perusing my account on Audible. I came across the title and it had the same reaction on me because I feel like we've all either known someone or we've had to work with someone or we've been stuck in some situation with somebody who is just not rational and not reasonable. You can't really use any kind of logic or reason with them because you just feel like you're banging your head against the pavement trying to get them to understand very simple concepts. And it's not, I think where a lot of people go wrong, and especially with things like political matters, so on and so forth, is you say, oh, that person is stupid. Okay. And I think we really need to clarify that there's a difference between being stupid and being irrational, okay? Somebody who is stupid doesn't really have very many justifications for what they believe. Somebody who's irrational has lots of justifications. They just don't seem to make very much sense, okay? And that's really the prime difference. And so what the author's saying here is that we really need to begin to understand the whole concept of crazy a little bit different. Now, I do want to preface before I get into discussing some of the points in this book that the author, who is a psychiatrist actually, makes it very clear that this book is not necessarily for people who are suffering from deep-seated cognitive mental illness, okay? And these would be your schizophrenics, possibly people who are psychopathic, sociopathic sort of thing. Those are people that no strategy that you have is going to work trying to get them to have a better relationship with those people, okay? I mean, they need to be under the strict care of a doctor. And nothing else other than that is probably going to improve the situation one iota, okay? So he's not necessarily talking about those people. I think he's just talking about your garden variety crazy. People who tend to get very angry or upset over what I would consider to be relatively minor things. People who overreact, raise their voice with very little provocation. I think the personality disorders probably fall into these categories. People who are narcissistic, people who are oppositional, defiant. And, you know, me working as a school teacher, you know, having to work with literally thousands of kids over my teaching career, I've seen it all. I've seen the whole gamut of kids and personalities and how to deal with them. And I think also Because children, especially the age group that I'm working with in middle school, their hormones are so out of whack and their bodies are changing so rapidly and their emotional spectrum is just all over the place that they may not even necessarily wind up as being crazy people later on. Probably 99% of them won't. But they're exhibiting a lot of crazy characteristics at this moment because they just haven't really learned to assimilate into what society expects of normalcy from people. And so I really felt like this book was gonna help me in more ways than one. So let's get to it. All right. The first thing, and I think the main point that the author really wants to get across in this book, and it's kind of one of those things where if you could only take away one thing, what would it be? And I would say what the author really wants to get across is that instead of doing what comes naturally when somebody is irrational, which is to try to point out why they're being irrational, and the author says that just doesn't work, okay? Basically, he gets into the brain science, and I didn't completely understand all of it, so I'll just give you the abridged version. But apparently, what we think of as our brain actually has three different parts, okay? It there's the reptilian brain, which is basically concerned with survival instincts, which is, you know, hunger, procreating, survival, those sort of things. And then after the reptilian brain is the mammalian brain, okay? And this is kind of what's more concerned with relationships, love, emotional feelings kind of thing. And then they're saying what the latest part of the brain, and this is, I think, what's unique to humans. I don't know if other animals have this or not. I don't think they do. And that's called the neomammalian brain. And that's like that's what lies our prefrontal cortex. And this gives humans the ability for long range planning, for logical inferencing, the ability to distinguish and compare points of view. And they said that this area of our brain isn't really that old. As a matter of fact, it's only probably been around for about 100,000 years or so. And so they're saying, like, in order to think like a logical, rational person, all three aspects of your brain have to line up and fire at once. And for everyone, the author says everybody is at least a little crazy some of the time. There's going to be certain times for everybody when all three parts of our brain do not line up and fire together. But what they're saying is that people who are crazy, it's kind of a continuous thing where the three triparts of their brain don't fire correctly. And why this is important is, at least for me, my natural reaction, you know, when dealing with somebody who's crazy is to try to talk them out of their crazy, saying things like, hey, calm down. It's not that bad. Let's just breathe. I think you're overreacting a bit. I mean, let's consider this. I do that with students all the time. And sometimes it works, but for crazy people, more often than not, it's not going to work. As a matter of fact, they're probably going to wind up perceiving you as being the enemy, okay, and think that, you know, you're the one who actually has the problem. When you're trying to use logical justifications to people whose brain isn't really wired correctly, you might as well be speaking a different language because they're not going to understand you. I think what it reminds me of is people who suffer from depression. And I think our natural reaction when people, if you've come across anybody who suffers from depression, and you know, I have certainly in my life, you know, professionally and personally, my natural reaction with these people is to try to, I guess, motivate them and to say, hey, man, you know, let's just go out. Let's go grab a drink. Let's go have a good time. You know, you just need to go out. You need to experience life. And they're saying that's some of the worst. I mean, you know, your intentions might be good. Your heart's in the right place. But that's one of the worst things that you could do. The problem isn't that they're not motivated. The problem is that their emotional chemist, their brain chemistry, it's not balanced correctly. And so, you know, saying things like that is just going to make you seem like a jerk to them, okay? And what the author's saying is what you really have to do is you have to, quote-unquote, lean into crazy, where you don't necessarily become crazy yourself, but you have to understand what the person is thinking, why they're thinking that way and respond in a way, like I said before, you know, if you try to use just basic logic and rationale, you're going to be speaking a different language. So basically, by answering them in a way that they understand, you begin to speak their language, okay? I think a really good example, I think, is my wife. She works in the hospital, in the emergency room, and she said very often people will come in trying to seek narcotics, okay? And they'll make up a million different stories. You know, they injured themselves. They've been having frequent headaches. They can't sleep. You know, I mean, it's like a laundry list of different things that they'll use tactics in order to get, you know, the narcotics. And so for a while, what my wife would do is she would try to explain to them why the problems that they're having aren't real problems and how they really need to get help and so on and so forth. And she said that this would just basically, I mean, really, when you're dealing with a crazy drug seeker, the only thing that's going to make them happy is by getting what they want. Anything that isn't, you know, yes, here is your narcotics is just going to sound like noise to them. So what she started doing is she started trying to think like the drug seeker. Now, in reality, it's actually illegal for her to prescribe narcotics for somebody, you know, especially long-term wise, without like proper documentation and proper specialists and without, you know, evaluations by psychiatrists and so on and so forth. So she was saying that, look, sir, so she started leaning into their crazy, started saying things like, look, you know, I know exactly what you're saying. I know the kitchen sink fell on your elbow and it's smashed and you can't sleep and you can't work and you need these drugs. Believe me, if it were up to me, I'd give it to you right now. But I can't do it because the hospital administration, they keep tabs on these things. And, you know, it's a huge bureaucracy. And I wish I had more control over it because people like you are suffering and you deserve better. And even though the patients aren't necessarily happy after hearing something like this, at least my wife gets what she wants, and that's for them to move on to a different target sort of thing so she can get back to doing her job. And I think that that's kind of what the author is saying, is that if you kind of, you want the crazy person to perceive you as their ally, not necessarily their antagonizer. So what you could do very often is, if you know people are prone to emotional outbursts, is once you have a disagreement, is to just to begin to ask for their suggestions. Like, oh, what would you like to do? Or what do you think we should do? And once they give a suggestion, you know, maybe talk about some of the pros and cons of dealing with the situation. And they were saying that might be a way, even if you don't necessarily reach some sort of consensus, at least you now have tried to partner up with the person as opposed to being oppositional, which completely changes the dynamic of the interaction. Okay. Another tactic, and one of the things that I think I would like to use at some point in the future, is a tactic called the belly roll. And the author coined this because when he was, in the wild, what happens are when two male animals fight for dominance, I think in the wolf or the big cat world, I forget which one it was, when one animal submits to the other animal, what they'll do is they'll turn around and they'll lay on their backs and they'll expose their stomach. And that's a sign of surrender. And when that happens, normally the aggressor now feels like they're dominant. They've gotten what they wanted, and more often than not, they normally leave the surrendered party alone at that point. And what the author was saying is he tells this really great story about how he was driving, and some guy winds up cutting off some guy, and then the guy who he cuts off, he didn't realize that the guy was crazy, and he winds up, like, you know, making the guy pull over. He gets out of his car. He's like 6'6", 300 pounds. He looks like he's about to, like, you know, punch the author out. And he gets to the car. And as soon as he gets to the car, the author says, he says, oh, gosh, I am so sorry. It is just one of those days. I can't seem to do anything right. The boss is on the verge of firing me. My wife is about to throw me out of the house and I can't even drive straight. I don't know what's going on here. And he said as soon as he did that, the driver who he cut off went from being in the, you know, in a furious rage to actually putting his arm around the guy and trying to console him and saying, hey, man, it's OK. Don't worry. You know, we all have bad days. It's just, you know, just try to be a little bit more careful out there. And the author's rationale is that people who are crazy, very often they're pack leaders and they want to keep the pack together. And so if you can move their role from being one of hostility and dominance to being one of nurturing and compassion, you might get a completely different response from the person. I think it may be an even better example is from a book I read a number of years ago, very famous, also dealing with a similar subject. It was called Emotional Intelligence by Daniel Goleman. It's a wonderful book. It was written maybe 20, 30 years ago, but in that book, what the author argues is that we tend to look at academic intelligence as being, you know, of the greatest importance. But the author was saying that emotional intelligence is far more important to being successful in this world. But anyway, he gets back to a story that kind of gives a similar situation as the belly roll. The author was saying, Daniel Goleman was saying that one time he was visiting Tokyo, you know, back in the 60s or 70s, and he was on the train. And there was a man who was a Japanese guy who was intoxicated, and he was belligerent, and he was threatening people on the subway. And Goleman, you know, had training in martial arts, and he said he was on the verge of getting ready to subdue the guy. They were about to get into an altercation. He was worried about everyone's safety. And he said there was this old Japanese guy in the corner who immediately saw when he saw what was going on, he asked the drunk guy, he said, hey, come here, come on over here. You smell like sake. What kind of sake have you been drinking? What do you like to drink? What time do you like to drink? Do you like to drink in the evenings, in the mornings? You said, would you like to come over to my house? You know, my wife is, you know, she likes to make sake, and we can, you know, she tends our little garden. It's really pretty. And he says, hey, look, I know you have a really nice and pretty wife too. And then the drunk Japanese guy starts, you know, he puts his hands in his face and he says, you know, his wife has died, and he's just very depressed and he's sad. And then the old man starts consoling him. Daniel Goleman winds up getting off the train, you know, because the situation looked okay. And he says he winds up looking back through the window, and the guy, the drunk Japanese guy, has his head in the lap of the older Japanese guy. And the guy is like stroking his head and his shoulder and consoling him. And he talks about how that is the pinnacle of emotional brilliance. But in order, what I'd like to think that the old wise Japanese guy knew is that trying to be logical or rational with people who are crazy, it just isn't going to work. You're going to have to, first of all, you got to learn to think like them. You have to get them to understand that A, you're not trying to be antagonistic, and B, on some level, you're trying to submit to them. Okay. And sometimes, what you can do is you really wind up throwing them off. And once they, very often, and I've known people like this, here's a better way of putting it. Very often, people will communicate with anger and hostility because that's the way they feel most comfortable communicating. And if you take that away from them, if you don't give them the opportunity to be angry or hostile, then it kind of throws them into a little bit of a disequilibrium, okay? And maybe when they are kind of scrambling a bit to gain their bearings, that might be when you get your opportunity to settle the situation down. Now, one thing I absolutely, you know, will not say is that nothing that the author talks about is going to get the crazy people to become normal people. That's not going to happen. And I don't think the author was trying to do that. He's only trying to give you some skills for your own personal mental health. Okay. You know, this is a little bit of a sidetrack, but I think it's relevant. Many of you might know about me. I actually have a PhD degree. I have a doctoral degree. And, you know, I've worked in education pretty much my entire life in public schools, almost exclusively in middle schools. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to do my graduate research on how to effectively, you know, manage classroom behaviors or student behaviors in the classrooms. And, you know, and I studied, you know, dozens and dozens of theorists, and I interviewed lots of teachers, and I read literature and had lots of thought-provoking discussions, just trying to come up with, you know, what's probably the best way to manage student behavior. And the conclusion that I wound up coming to at the end of, you know, several years of research is that the actual program of classroom behavior that you use with the students is not really all that important. What's really most important is that you manage your own behaviors. And in other words, that you aren't taking things personally, that you understand that the kids really aren't sophisticated with controlling their emotional output. And, you know, if you don't take things personally, you can probably salvage and save yourself a lot of stress. And so I think that's really kind of the same concept of what the author is trying to get across, is that it's not necessary. You have to stop thinking about it in terms of helping the people become better people. It's really helping you to maintain your own mental sanity. And I think the last thing I'm going to talk about is the author says, and just trying to recognize, you know, recognizing your own crazy. And the author gives some examples of how he really thought the patient was being crazy at certain times when in reality he was the one making the mistake. I have done this hundreds of times in my 15-year teaching career with kids, where I was angry or upset, I couldn't get the class under control, or my lesson wasn't going the way I was hoping it would, or the kids weren't cooperating, and I would just immediately start snapping at students. And even though sometimes they were just trying to help me, okay, for example, I'd get really angry and tell everyone to sit down because I was frustrated, I couldn't find the remote to my projector, and, you know, five different kids are trying to ask me a question, but I can't be bothered, so I'm telling them to sit down. And I didn't realize that one of the kids actually had my remote and he was just trying to give it to me, sort of thing. So, you know, above everything else, you know, use the tactics that the author is talking about, but just be aware of your own crazy. At, you know, don't put it past yourself that you might be being a little crazy yourself. And yeah, I mean, so like I said, if you feel like, you know, some of you need some extra skills working with people who are a bit irrational, then definitely pick up the book. It's a fun read. It's pretty quick. I enjoyed it. Certainly, I learned some skills that are going to be helpful to me going forward. And that's Talking to Crazy, How to Deal with the Irrational and Impossible People in Your Life by Mark Olston. Okay. Well, that's pretty much it for me for now. I will be back in a couple weeks with another book. I'm not sure what I'm going to be reading yet, but it'll be a surprise. Until then, if you're in the Americas, happy Thanksgiving. If you are abroad, then happy holidays for whichever holidays are coming up, and I will see you soon. Thanks for joining me.